Hello, and welcome to the Make Money Mediating Podcast. I'm your host, Susan Guthrie, and I'm an attorney, mediator, trainer, keynote speaker, author, podcaster, social media influencer, technology junkie, consultant, and coach. And although I know that sounds like a lot, but what it really means to me is that I've found a way to make a living doing what I love and doing it in a way that lets me help others. So in this podcast, I want to share some tips and insights into helping you create the career that lights you up and pays your bills, whether that's as a mediator, attorney, collaborative professional, or really anything that you are passionate about. So I'll be chatting with some of the most successful and influential experts in all areas associated with building your practice, and I'll share my own thoughts and the lessons I've learned along the way. So come along on the journey with us, and soon you'll have a practice that will let you make money mediating too. Welcome back to the Make Money Mediating Podcast, where I dive into the business side of peacemaking. I'm Susan Guthrie, your host, and today's episode is all about that crucial question that every dispute resolution faces at some point. What are you worth? Yes, I'm talking about how you're going to set your fees, your prices. And this isn't, although not rocket science, it does blend art, science, and a bit of soul searching. So let's dive in, because this is actually something that you need to be thinking about not only as you start your practice, but as a constantly evolving question that deserves reflection at various times throughout your practice. So first, when you're developing a comprehensive pricing strategy for your services as a dispute resolution professional, it's essential to consider various factors that can really significantly impact how you're going to set those fees. But first, sit down and actually write out a comprehensive list of all the services that you offer, because your pricing might be different for each service that you offer. And so this is an exercise that hopefully you've already done. Many people have a services page on their website and have thought this through. But if you have not, just a quick aside here, I would look at the services that you offer. If it's only, say, mediation, one way to up your ability to help more people and hopefully increase your number of clients and your bottom line would be to look at your skill set in that one service that you are already providing, like mediation, and see what other services you might provide that use those same skills that might have value to potential clients, and make that another service area that will perhaps then have a different fee. So some examples might be, if you are a mediator who does mediations, you might also consider doing mediation coaching, where you work with the individuals who are going through mediation with a different mediator. This is very commonly done in family law mediations. You might consider, if you're an attorney, a family law attorney, you might consider being a consulting attorney to the parties who are going through the mediation, or review attorney, review counsel, to review the documents and help them finalize their agreements as they go through mediation with another party. You can also be a negotiation coach. There's various different kinds of services that you might be able to use that same sort of skill set and strategies that you use as a mediator to help people in other ways. So before you even start looking at the factors that you're going to consider in setting your prices, I want you to think about all the different services that you are setting them for. And do keep in mind that very often they will have different prices involved. Some people work on one set hourly fee, and we'll talk about that later in this episode. But very often you have a different value with different services. All right, so as we take a deeper dive into the considerations that can impact how you set your fees, I want to be sort of informed. I've done some research and gotten some insights from industry experts and research as well. So I'm going to throw in my two cents on each one of these, as well as additional data that I've been able to find. So when you sit down to set a fee for whatever the service might be, and really this goes beyond dispute resolution, to my lawyers who are out there, to any professional who is out there providing a service, you will have to value your service. You are going to have to decide what you are worth, right? So you have to set this pricing. So these are going to apply to all of these areas. First and foremost, what is your experience and expertise? Your level of experience and your specific expertise in the field absolutely directly influences your ability to command higher fees. So a professional with decades of experience offers more than just time. They bring the depth, specialized knowledge, and certainly a track record that justifies some of that premium pricing. Flip of that, if you are rather new to the field, you know, it's interesting, we do 40-hour trainings at Mostyn Guthrie Academy, and very often the trainings are filled with people who are learning how to be divorce and family mediators, and we have very experienced family law attorneys, financial professionals, therapists who have been practicing in those areas for years and charge accordingly, in accordance with their experience and expertise. And then they take divorce mediation training, and their first thought is that they will bill for their divorce mediation services as they have in the past for their legal services, their therapeutic services, their financial services. And Woody, my wonderful partner, Woody Mostyn, literally says to them, and you have to see the look on everyone's face on the screen, is you can't charge that. You're not worth it. And he's saying that to shock them into realizing that their experience and expertise may give them a basis for asking for a high price point in their long-term practice. But when you are starting a new practice area, you just don't have the experience and the expertise. And I don't care how many mediations you have been in as counsel, you are not a mediator and a valuable, high-priced mediator until you have some experience and expertise under your belt. So keep that in mind. That's one factor. One, we got a bunch to go through, folks. The next one, what is the market demand for what you are offering, for what services you are offering? In the field of mediation or dispute resolution, there are certain areas that are higher demand. Right now, those tend to be technology disputes, family law disputes, other areas where we are seeing the courts overburdened or where there are high value disputes in play, we often will see those as high demand. And those high demand areas enable professionals to leverage their specialized skills to ask for higher fees. So are you in one of those high demand areas? Does your experience and expertise, consideration number one, fall into a high demand area? This may take some market research. There are a lot of different ways to do that. Jump on the internet, start looking for data and information on this. You can use our friends ChatGPT, Gemini as well, but remember, you should also be using fact searching engines such as, you know, good old fashioned Google and Bing. But understanding that if you are practicing in an area or you offer services in a high demand area, you can probably up-level your fees. Now, many people are dispute resolution professionals and they handle a variety of different types of matters. And so you may have different fees for different demand areas. So you may have a lower fee for certain types of, say, your mediations, and a higher fee for those high demand areas. It's not one size fits all. So that's your market demand consideration. Your next one is a really practical one. It's where are you? Where are you located? Because the geographic location of your practice absolutely significantly affects your pricing strategies. We know, just in a very basic general way, that urban centers that have higher living costs and operational expenses, naturally, those see higher rates than rural or less densely populated areas. So the location is a reflection on the broader economic environment in which you operate. But here again, we have some special factors. We live in a world now where geographic borders don't necessarily govern our practice. So this may or may not be one that applies to you if you have a virtual practice. If your practice goes outside the bounds of what I call a terrestrial place, right? If you live in Timbuktu, but you're mediating cases across the United States or arbitrating cases throughout, you know, Indonesia, whatever it might be, then your market area, I'm sorry, your location is that entirety. And if you're working pretty much anywhere with anyone, you may have to have fees that are starting at a certain amount to keep take into consideration that you may have different price points that are expected with different clients. So often to cover that and to cover yourself, rather than saying that if I'm in a rural area, I charge this. If you are in an urban area, I charge this. If you want to optimize that, you might say fees ranging from this to this, depending on, and then give it some factors. Or you might say fees starting at, you know, subject to review with individual clients curated to your particular needs or something along those lines. But if you are working virtually, for you, the pricing really doesn't change much because you are located wherever you need and want. Thankfully, that's the best part about a virtual practice. You can be located wherever you want. So that may or may not be a major factor. Another consideration is your client base. So understanding, we've looked at many of these things that are focused on things you can control. But there's also just what are the financial capabilities and expectations of the clients you serve? You need to understand what their capabilities are when it comes to paying for services such as yours. So clearly, corporate clients may have larger budgets for your dispute resolution services. Individual clients, again, let's go back to the family law folks, or landlord-tenant folks, or small claims folks. Those are individuals seeking individual dispute resolution services. They may have lesser capability to meet higher fees. So you may need to tailor your pricing to match your client's abilities to pay while you still reflect your value to them. And that is part of that delicate balance that I was talking about at the very beginning. So something to take into consideration. And by the way, I am suggesting that as you go through your process, you write down each one of these particular considerations and then write in all that you can think of underneath each of those for each one of your services so that you have all of the data, because it's when you do run through all of the considerations, then you have the information you need to set your fee. Another important consideration for many of us is what's your cost of doing business? Because we wish in the world we lived in that it was all fees coming in, but we all know we have fees going out or expenses going out. So there are operational costs, which may or may not include rent, but certainly your software subscriptions. I don't know anyone who is operating a business these days without some software and hardware demands. You may have administrative expenses. you know, what your expenses are. That's sort of your break even. You need to know what you need, what's your nut, as they say, each month, each week, however you're going to look at this. And so that you can ensure that your practice is actually profitable and sustainable over the long term, unless you have unlimited wealth and funds and this is just a hobby. For most of us, that's not the way it goes. So you do need to know what your cost of doing business is, have that target figure, but I'll also tell you, very often people are running a financially leggy, as I call it, leggy business. Often we are paying expenses that we do not need to have or paying for more than we need to. And so there should be constantly, subject for another podcast episode, but you should constantly be evaluating your costs of doing business to see where you can cut back. And for so many of us, part of that has been going online. I no longer, and for years, have not had to pay rent or any of the associated costs with a terrestrial business. It's fabulous. That freed up thousands and thousands of dollars a year that I don't need to meet. But there are a variety of different ways. If your subscriptions are outdated or you're paying for multiple subscriptions for things that do the same things, then you want to be constantly tweaking that. All right, so know your cost of doing business. Next one, next consideration, what's the competition charging? What's your competition? Almost all of us have some competition. And that may be, again, for different services, it may be different competition. It may be people in different areas. If you're a practitioner with many, many years, you are going to have different competition in the same subject area than people who are brand new or earlier days in that area. So you want to go and find an awareness of what your competitors are charging, because that's going to help you position your services appropriately within the market. Clients, again, although they have certain capabilities, they also very often have certain expectations based upon what others are charging. So you need to know what those others are charging. So that's going to require, again, some research, some asking people if they're willing to share that information, looking around on other people's websites if you have competitors that you consider relatively similar to you in your practice. And you want to know this, not so that you can charge $50 less an hour than they are. It's not about underpricing, but it is about understanding how your unique value proposition justifies your pricing structure compared to theirs. So keep the extra $50 in there if you're charging more than they are, but know why you're worth it. Be ready for that question. Or charge $50 less. That works for people too. And then finally, what is the value you are providing? I always tell people that part of being a dispute resolution professional is knowing the benefits of dispute resolution, especially things like mediation, collaborative, divorce, arbitration. What are you giving to people through your services? What do they gain? And always remember, yes, there's definitely going to be a financial factor. We know that dispute resolution services are generally much less expensive than litigation services, but they also bring a great deal more. And so when you are considering the value of what you do, consider also that you are offering peace and resolution. That also brings significant value to your clients. That often saves them considerable amounts compared to not only the cost of litigation, but in their time and in their stress levels. And that is something that you should constantly be emphasizing and knowing as a value, because that is a cornerstone of your pricing strategy. You want to reflect the tangible and the intangible benefits that you provide. So those are all factors that, again, I want you to write down each one of these factors. They'll be listed in the show notes. And I want you to go through, and for each service you offer, I want you to do the research. I want you to do the thinking. I want you to do the introspection to put down as much information about you, your services, and your market as you can. That's going to give you a lot of clarity as you do this. And, you know, again, I'm always talking about this, but guys, you can go do this with ChatGPT. You can do this exercise, do it with Gemini, do it with our friends, generative AI friends. They are wonderful for running through this in an efficient and time speedy type of way. It'll go a lot faster if you're using their services. Just tell them about your practice and then ask them what they need to know that would quantify your experience and expertise. What's the market demand? Give it information and context. Great exercise to do with them. All right, so you've looked at the factors that go into setting your pricing. But the other really important thing to consider is that there's not just one way to bill. Often that's what we've been doing in the past, but that is not the world that we live in today. And in fact, there are many different pricing models. So now that we've considered what you want to think about when setting your prices, I also want to dive into these different models because different ones may suit different services that you offer better, and some of them may just suit your practice better. So first one is the good old-fashioned standard, so familiar to my legal colleagues and one that many legal colleagues then carry over into their dispute resolution practice, and that of course is the hourly rate, the hourly billable. And it has benefits. It's straightforward. It's quantifiable to a certain degree anyway. And it has problems though. And we've known this for a long time. We know that no one really loves an hourly billing model. It's hard for us because it puts us under a constant need to be accounting for our time and tracking our time. And for any of you who've ever worked in a law firm where you have to do your billables every day, all week, every month, every year, and meet certain quotas, et cetera, you know that a lot of effort goes into that. So there's a negative to us right there. There's also a negativity in the transparency issue. Clients do need to understand what they're paying for. And unfortunately, this particular model, although we give them perhaps a line item of what was accomplished in that hour that we're billing them for, or in that 6-minute increment that we're billing them for, they don't really understand what that is. And so as it accrues over time, frankly, what we know is they begin to distrust the high fees and that they are getting the value for those fees. We don't have a very clear way to share that with them. And so transparency is absolutely missing. And so since the sense of fairness to the client and business viability is challenged with this model. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't work for some, and it has certainly allowed attorneys for eons to make a good living. But in dispute resolution, the other thing I want you to realize is that when people are looking to harness dispute resolution, very often they are looking for something different than the traditional litigation model. This is especially true in personal services. So when you are working with clients directly, if you are someone who, for example, is a divorce mediator or working with the disputants directly, pro se litigants, etc., trust me, one of the reasons they're wanting to consider mediation or your services is that they didn't want a traditional litigation strategy. So to give them a billing process that mimics what they would get in a law firm doesn't exactly give them the feeling that they're looking for in your services. So this ongoing question about the viability of long-term of the billable hour model is something to keep in mind. Not saying don't use it, but I am saying being aware that it has very severe limitations on both sides. I really hated having to keep track of my billable hours and account for every 6 minutes of my day. Did not enjoy that. Moving on, something that you've definitely probably heard of and has really gained ground, especially in the world of mediation, is flat fees. And they definitely are appealing. They're great for predictability, which is something that we know many people want when they are going through conflict. The opposite of the billable hour model, which has very little predictability to it. Flat fees have all kinds of predictability to it. So they're especially suitable when you are offering services with a well-defined scope. And it's much simpler. It's easier for you to budget. It's easy because you do not have to keep track of the time unless time is something that is being quantified as part of your flat fee, but then you're only just keeping track of say your flat fee includes 4 hours of mediation, then you're just keeping track of the fact that they got 4 hours of mediation time. So it's much, much easier for budgeting and for timekeeping and tracking for both you and your clients. Flip side of that, you can run into problems when the need for services exceeds what you had defined. And so how is that handled? And how I handled that, because I went to a flat fee model quite some time ago, is I actually went to what I called a modified flat fee model. It's a hybrid approach. And so what I was trying to do is capture the best of both worlds. This particular model for me, as again, a divorce mediator, was magic. Clients loved it. I loved it. And it worked really well for my practice. And there's kind of two modified flat fee models that I've seen most professionals using. The first one is to quantify and define what you know will be done. Many matters have very well-defined specific things that need to be done as a part of that service. Intake, document preparation, paperwork review, scheduling, back-end work, drafting of agreements, MOUs, whatever those things might be. We can usually, within safe parameters, put a time frame on those. And so for many practitioners, it makes sense to do an upfront flat fee and include within that all of the things that, or within a certain certainty, you know they are going to take a certain amount of time and charge a flat fee for them. One and done with those. And then what I did actually for the divorce mediation is I then just charged for the actual mediation sessions themselves based on an hourly rate. And I just charged for those as we went different ways. So for example, I usually worked in 2-hour increments with couples. And at the end of each 2-hour increment, they would either have signed a credit card release and my staff would just bill their credit cards in whatever proportion they had agreed upon, or they would just receive a link and they would pay it directly right afterwards. That worked great, and that gave them as much control as was possible, which they appreciated, because they were able to, to the best of their ability, control how many sessions they needed and control the rate at which they had them. And I didn't have to keep track of any of it. It just meant that there was an upfront fee that came in, which was great before we got started. I had as much paid for as possible upfront. And then as I did work, I got paid for it as I went along. Now, another hybrid approach would be to include a certain number of mediation hours or service hours in that flat fee. So it would be all of the things you can quantify, and for example, 4 2-hour mediation sessions. And they would be non-refundable. So if they only use 3, they wouldn't get it back. If they went over, they'd start getting charged for the overage on the hourly basis. So modified flat fee, definitely if you have things that you can quantify, I highly recommend that you look into it. Clients want certainty. Now, another method, and this will harken back to the lawyer days and the lawyer method, but going on a retainer, where you make a, best I can tell, a guesstimate as to what you think the complexity of their matter and the issues that they are facing calls for, and you have them make an upfront payment that you draw down on as you provide services. This has the same issues as the hourly rate model in that you have to keep track. There's no certainty to it. Transparency is the same issue. So if you're dealing with clients who are coming in through attorneys, I will say billable hour and retainer feels very familiar to attorneys, right? It's how most of them will charge. So sometimes that might be the best method for them, something to keep in mind. But if you're dealing directly with the public, very often that's not what they're looking for. Now, something else that's kind of an exciting trend that's emerging is the subscription-based fee model. And I am seeing this more and more, and I will say this is for mediation, this is for coaching, this is for legal services in certain areas. It's a model that's especially suited for professionals who have repeat high-volume clients. Right? So if you are doing services for a particular industry and you're one of the go-to people for that, or you have a company that brings all of its employment disputes to you, a subscription-based fee model might look good to them and has a lot of benefits. This is how you might structure it. So you'd offer different service tiers. Each one would provide a set range of services for a fixed monthly or annual fee. So again, very prescribed, just like in the flat fee and modified flat fee. And it could range from like basic consultation and mediation services to more comprehensive packages, which could include emergency interventions, in-depth case analysis or opinions. It could include coaching or training for staff, different things that you can do as upsells or higher tiered subscription-based fee models. The benefits, gosh, for clients, it means very predictable expenses and continuous on-demand support or within certain parameters to support. For dispute resolution professionals, it translates into stable revenue streams. You know what's coming in based upon your subscriptions and a deeper client relationship. It builds that relationship for you because since they've paid for you, who are they more likely to reach out to? Your services are there for them. It also lets them know all the different things that you can do for them. It lets you build value for them so they up to a different subscription tier. So very, very appealing to clients. And I think the future for many dispute resolution professionals, certainly for coaches, and I would argue for certain types of legal practices. Then there's packages. So just a note on packages. When you can bundle your services, you can attract clients in kind of the way that you are, the subscription-based fee model is working. It allows you to bundle services for people who are looking for their comprehensive solutions. It's a great way to increase that client engagement while offering them additional value. You're not a one and done. You have more services that you can offer. So how might those services be bundled together? And then you give them a slightly lower rate, but you're booking more services, right? And you're offering more services to that client. So go back to the top of this episode. Think about all the different services that you identified that you can offer and now start putting them together into different comprehensive packages. And then you'll price those accordingly. Here's another one that I have done personally. I put those packages right on the website. People loved it. Now, I was working with B2C. I was working with consumers, self-represented litigants going through divorce, but they really liked being able to see what that pricing was and what they could get for that. They got to value it themselves before they hired me for it. And most often people ended up going with a package, feeling like they were getting more bang for the buck, so to speak. So when you are looking to set your fees, if you are someone who's just said, well, I charge $350 an hour and that's it, I hope that you are seeing that it might be a more nuanced conversation than that to your benefit and to the benefit of your clients, because honestly, anything that you do that benefits your clients benefits you. Happy clients send you more clients. Happy clients leave you great testimonials, happy clients, make you happier about the job that you are doing. All of those things help to boost your success. So setting your prices as a dispute resolution professional isn't just about covering your costs or maximizing profits. It's about reflecting the true value of your expertise, your experience, and the peace that you help to create for people. Remember, the goal is to establish a pricing model that works for you and your clients, which will help you foster those long-term relationships built on trust, value, and mutual respect. As you navigate your pricing strategy, keep all these considerations and models in mind, and don't be afraid. In fact, I encourage you to adjust your practice, adjust your pricing models and your prices as your practice grows and evolves. So I hope, again, as always, that you have found this helpful. Please reach out to me if you have questions or if you have ideas that I haven't covered here. I always want to know about them. Susan at Susan E. Guthrie. And thanks so much for listening. I'll be with you again next week. Thanks for listening in on this episode of the Make Money Mediating Podcast. I hope you got some great insights and tips on creating your dream practice. Join us every week on Thursdays for a new episode, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss anything. And if you're enjoying the podcast, here's a shameless ask. Please consider giving it a 5-star rating and tell us in a review what you find most helpful. It's honestly the best way for others to find the show so that they can make money mediating too. I'll see you next week.